What's up, everybody? My name is Damon Eaton. Happy to be here for this inaugural podcast. We're still figuring out the name, but it's definitely part of the Tono Latino universe.
Umbrella. So
there you go, umbrella. So once again, my name is Damon Eaton. Excited to be here and get into some issues here about the debate. I am in New York City, where it is currently raining. Ready to talk shit.
Awesome. I am Silvia Salazar, founder of Tono Latino, coming at you from Portland, Oregon, where it is also raining and cold. Very excited to have found Damon, another political junkie, in the interwebs. So I have somebody to talk with about politics, and I can stop bothering my husband.
Right.
So this is the first debate with 12 candidates. What the hell? It was getting smaller, and then two new people slipped in versus debate number three. So we had Tulsi Gabbard, congresswoman from Ohio, from Hawaii, excuse me, and the billionaire Tom Steyer, the dude with
Tom
the plaid.
Tom Steyer and Tulsi Gabbard.
Steyer.
Right. Yeah. That was definitely frustrating for me because, you know, you just want to see progression. Just in life in general, you want to see progression. And so, like, when we went, you know, the last debate, when it dropped down to 10 people and it was just one night and it wasn't this marathon, it was like, okay, cool. It's enough time to process. Each a lot of times they had was, I think, a little bit longer. I don't remember the exact specifics, but I feel like it was like at least 15 seconds longer, which sounds stupid because it is stupid. These 15, 30 seconds, like, how many, like, you got to time all this stuff. That's lame to me. But like, mentally, just psychologically, just adding two more people and seeing, okay, we're in this for 3 hours, it was definitely a little painful. And for two people who were, I'm sorry, never going to be a factor. So it was like a waste, in my opinion.
I agree with you. I also was discussing this on Instagram that somebody was commenting and saying that they didn't feel like they were impressed by any of the candidates last night. And I got to thinking, and I really don't believe in a debate that is 3 hours long, that is way too long, with 12 candidates. You're going to be able to find your candidate shine on stage. You're better off taking those 3 hours and investing the time to research the top six candidates, spend 30 minutes on each of the six candidates or however you want to distribute the time.
Amen.
But it's really more for political entertainment. Like, you and I are obsessed with politics and enjoy this somehow, but it's not going to be the place where you find a candidate to fall in love with.
Well, let's be clear. I don't enjoy this. I enjoy politics in general. I have a passion for politics. I'm a history buff. I think that's where all this sort of comes from. But right now, my interest is definitely driven partially by fear. Fear that enough
people
will
have four more years.
Exactly, and fear that, you know, I look at the you know, Hispanic electorate. And it's clear that we're not showing up. And I'm like, you know, just like you, what inspired you, like, I look at this and I'm like, hey, this is, if we don't do something, if we don't speak to our people, and we don't motivate them to show up, especially in places that matter, especially in swing states, you know, like, we're going to be stuck with this same thing again. So yeah, I am tuned in, you know, vigorously right now to try to, you know, in hopes of us being able to make the best pick in this debate. But I don't enjoy feeling the need to watch or pay attention to the news all day because I'm terrified of what's going to happen right now. It's a scary time, quite frankly.
It is exhausting. So what are some of your takeaways from the debate?
Okay, so the biggest takeaway from the debate is that it was like, number one was that the whole thing was irrelevant. Okay. And I'll explain what I mean by that. And because the whole night was set up. It was like, it was almost like a passing of the torch. And it was interesting if you get some of the new information about Biden's burn rate and you look at Warren's burn rate, you'll understand sort of how in the media they were really sort of positioning Warren as the new front runner, de facto front runner of the campaign, or sorry, not of the campaign, of the primary. And but even though they wouldn't let her come out first, they still had Biden come out first. And even though she's leading in Iowa, they still let her come out second, which I thought was a little funky. But they basically laid it out where she's the front runner. And the whole night, she's really taking way more hits than anybody else. And then at the end of the night, Bernie has the ultimate mic drop without actually having to say anything. Because he let leak, or someone let leak, his campaign let leak, that, you know, three out of the four members of the squad, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, and Rashida Tlaib, announced that they're all going to endorse Bernie on Saturday. That's the biggest power grab endorsement in that was available on the table, quite frankly, save for Obama showing up and endorsing you. There, to me, there's no bigger endorsement in Democratic politics.
You're absolutely correct. The biggest Democratic name in this country that is not running for president is AOC. Whether you love her or hate her, you cannot argue that right. she's not the most popular Democratic progressive figure out there. And you have really, really good points. But Bernie was 1, 2, 3, 4, number 5 in speaking time at 13 minutes compared to Warren at 22 minutes and 47 seconds in the debate, precisely because of what you said, that she came out as the front runner in a lot of these discussions. And so she would have to respond. Mm-hmm. And that's why she got the most speaking time. And then towards the end, we get all the notification from the Washington Post saying that AOC is going to endorse Sanders. And that was a huge slam dunk for him.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a coup. And it was a coup that he needed, quite frankly, because I thought, and I hate to be a man of puns, but I was feeling like his campaign was on life support. and then to see this show up, this is literally like a defibrillator. Not to go Grey's Anatomy on everybody, but this is...
Those are some good metaphors. I like absolutely. Them. I don't know if absolutely. Our listeners are going to agree, but I'm with you there. The whole time since he had his heart attack, all we've heard is, like you see on Twitter, he's done, he's done, he's done. And then he knocked it out of the park with that endorsement last night.
Right. So, you know, that to me was the biggest takeaway out of the whole, out of the entire debate. But since we are here to break down the debate, I guess we can talk about some of the things that actually did happen in the debate. Let's see. What were my biggest takeaways? I mean, I guess I think about moments. I think that Andrew Yang, even though he probably was second to last in time ahead of Tom Steyer, if I'm guessing, you've got the chart in front of you, am I right? Second to last in time?
No. He was number 9.
I think that he, you know, it's funny because I've watched so much of his content and he's just literally recycling the exact same talking points. But the way he's constantly able to stay on message and drop those truth bombs, timely truth bombs, and the fact that he actually got Liz to, to acknowledge him. Sorry, Senator Warren, to acknowledge.
I was going to point out. I'm like, yeah, do you know her personally?
I know exactly. and well, someone else was calling her Liz on during the debate last night, which I also took note of. And I think it was
Klobuchar was calling her Elizabeth.
Okay, there you go. And so I was like, you know, I was in the moment, right? Don't shoot. Stay out of my mentions. And so, you know, I was very impressed with that moment. And I think the thing that kind of disgusted me the most out of the whole thing was honestly the way in which Mayor Pete was going after Senator Warren. You know, he's not trying to, like if you, you want to contrast your policies with the other candidates, that's fine. I got no problem with that. But when you're trying to make her say something that you know is only going to help Republicans run ads against her, it's not going to help you. It's only going to help hurt her if she gets into the general. I thought that that was selfish, and I thought that I just didn't appreciate the move. Like, his path to victory is not through Elizabeth Warren. His path to victory is through is to take hold of that, you know, that moderate lane that Joe Biden is still dominating right now. And so to go at Liz Warren like that, I thought was pretty lame. And I want my $5 back.
So Mayor Pete and Amy Klobuchar are more of the moderate candidates, and they both really came out fighting last night to show people that they are an alternative to the more progressive, I guess, candidates like Warren and Sanders.
Correct.
Klobuchar was also attacking Warren directly in a couple of points, just like Mayor Pete or Pete Buttigieg, with saying like, okay, so what exactly is your plan for Medicare for All, and tell us exactly how you're going to pay for it. Mayor Pete said, well, you're the candidate that says that has a plan for everything. What exactly is your plan for this? And here's the funny thing. An NPR poll from back in July is building Mayor Pete's case in this scenario, specifically because 70% of those polled think that Medicare for All is a good idea if it's provided as an option, but only 41%, so that's a big drop of almost 30 points, think it's a good idea if you're replacing private insurance.
Right, and the wording on these polls is also what matters. But I bet here's a stat you didn't pull up. How many people, what was the polling on Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act when Obama was in office? It was terrible. Everybody hated it. They thought it was terrible.
People still hate Obamacare, but they love the Affordable Care Act. Right.
Absolutely. Well, that's the whole, we can do a whole nother podcast on misinformation. But the point is that once people got into it and the concept of, you know, protecting your pre-existing conditions or allowing you to still get insurance even if you had pre-existing conditions, once that became a reality for people, they were like, oh, we like this. No, we need to keep this. And, you know, that's something that Obama counted on, I think, that will go and speak positively towards his legacy. And the issue is, what the point is, that these people are looking, these polls, like, people don't like change. They get uncomfortable with change. I got uncomfortable just updating to OS Catalina in my Mac the other day. So like, it's just, you know, change is uncomfortable. I'm used to the other operating system. It's working fine. What the hell? Like, when they hear this idea that, hold on, I'm going to have to give up my insurance and, you know, like that scares them. But at the end of the day, I believe that, you know, once you get there and you never have to pay a premium ever again, people are going to, you know, they're going to be on board with that. People have already shown that they're into having this public option. 70%. That's what they're saying. Like, 70% is saying, hey, we would like there to be a government option where we can just, y'all take care of the insurance for us, and we don't ever have to call an insurance company again and complain about why we can't get this surgery or we can't get this medicine.
Or it's we just, can't pay.
Right.
You're bringing up some really, really good points. Also, similar points to an article that you and I both read earlier today from the Washington Post, pointing out that in the sense of healthcare, the moderators, just exactly like you said, are doing a favor to the Republican National Convention and to the Republican candidates in creating these great sound bites to attack whoever is the nominee, or Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders right now, by framing those questions in a way that is just a gotcha, instead of having a real discussion on something that should be seen as a positive. All these people are trying to figure out ways to give as many people in this country healthcare. affordable healthcare. And I think that would be a much better way to discuss this instead of trying to get somebody to say something wrong, which 100%. Just reminded me of the last debate and a point that I made in my notes, the difference in Julian Castro, not related specifically to care healthcare, but remember that last debate, he was like a dog pouncing on Biden and catching him on things. It's that same attitude of like, haha, got you saying something wrong. And this debate, he was way more calm, way more respectful. He had some really, really good points about, for example, foreign policy and how President Trump is letting ISIS prisoners go free with the situation in Turkey and Syria while he's caging children, or that gun reform issues also affect, and Castro brought up the recent murder of Atatiana Johnson, a young woman that was murdered inside her house in Fort Worth, Texas, this past Saturday.
Amen. Yeah, you know what's funny? Just real talk, because we weren't around doing this before to even talk about the last debate. But since Castro is the only Hispanic in the room, you know, I thought the coverage of him was a little overblown, quite frankly. I wasn't mad at the way he dealt with Biden in the last campaign, even though in the last debate, even though. He was actually kind of incorrect in his characterization of it, but like he was only really the reality is he's only saying something that everybody else is thinking, and that's that Joe is a little, he's not, you know, the sharpest tool in the shed, and so like I feel like people really came out at this guy in a way that was unfair, and when I think it was interesting to look at the difference between the quote unquote Anglo media and the Hispanic media. And look at the coverage of it overwhelmingly in the Hispanic media, like they were patting him on the back, and in the Anglo media, like they were kind of like waving their finger at him, like bad Julian.
I was actually annoyed last debate, because I don't think I get what he's saying, and I agree with the bottom part of his message. And if you try to follow a thought with Joe Biden speaking, you will get lost. At least every time he opens his mouth, I really cannot follow his train of thought.
Right.
But I was not a fan of the way he did it. Even though he was correct in his intention of what he was trying to show, I don't think it was the best way to do it. And I prefer the Julian that we saw in the first debate, the second debate, and again last night. That was more controlled.
But he was the same guy. In the first debate, when he went at Beto, in the first debate, that was the same, like, you know, Nancy Kerrigan move, you know, with crowbar to the knee that he did with Beto. It's the same move he did to Biden. It's just that people felt like it was a little bit more of a low blow because they thought that he was being ageist. And I feel like he's not being ageist. I feel like all he's doing is pointing out what everybody's thinking. By the way, this is what's going to make this a great podcast, because clearly we disagree on this issue, and I'm not afraid to debate with you about this.
I think it's good that we disagree. Can you imagine the both of us saying like, "Oh yeah, I agree with you all the time."
Yeah. Ugh. So you know, and so like I look at this, and I was like, "Yeah, man, you needed to do that, because guess what? If Biden were to get into the general and have to debate Trump, Trump's going to be hitting him with that, clobbering him over the head with that the whole night." So this guy, like, you know, like the debate is supposed to be like training camp. So you get in shape. How are we going to sit here and it's going to be a tea party in our debates? And then when you get to Trump, all of a sudden it's a knife fight, and our guy's going to be, or girl, our guy or our candidate's going to be ready to go in and handle that fight. So I support that. I'm here for that.
Okay.
So at least though.
Our first disagreement. I like this. I really like this. Okay, what else did I wrote? So that was one of the Castro thing was one of my notes. We already covered Bernie. Bernie.
Oh, wait,
I was nervous.
Oh, go ahead.
About him coming back because of his health scare. He recently had a heart attack. But the funny thing is that I've been sick this week, and 70 something year old man that just had a heart attack is in better shape than I am at almost half his age, and it was kind of funny. I was impressed. I was impressed at how good he looked on stage, even though he didn't. I didn't see him talking really a lot. He had, like you said, a great night.
I think Bernie had his feet up the whole night. He was like, I mean, he's like, you know, he came in and dropped some bombs, but I think the whole night he was just sitting there like, watch, none of this matters. This is all irrelevant. He's like, Bernie's like, I'm Thanos. I've got the Infinity Gauntlet. I'm snapping my fingers as soon as this thing is over, and half of you are gonna disappear. Like it's just seriously, like he had a nuke in his back pocket.
And we officially have landed the first Marvel reference in our podcast. Yeah. Boom.
I'm a pretty ginormous Marvel nerd, as are you. So I'm a comic book nerd in general. I'm no hate to DC people. I rock with DC as well. But the biggest thing that disgusted me, their decisions to ignore so many important issues to the electorate.
Oh my God. You mean like asking who is your BFF or your not BFF question?
Oh yeah, that made me want to throw. If I could create a throw up emoji through the podcast, I would do that right now.
We're just gonna skip that part and let them imagine.
But the point is that like they didn't talk about climate change. Like it was an afterthought. It was a pivot in somebody's response to some other nonsense question. They didn't bring up climate change. This is the number one issue for Generation Z voters. These are the people we need. These are the youth, the youngest members coming into voting age that we need to show up and vote. And you got little kids marching all over the world. We just had the big, what was that, climate walkout? The little Scandinavian girl. She sailed here. Yeah. And all these kids all over the world are walking out of school. This is what young people care about the most. This is their jam. And
but all of the candidates really want the youth to get involved. They want them to go out and vote, but they're not talking about issues that affect them. They're very busy talking about Ellen being friends with George Bush and who their unlikely BFF is. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, that was
the guys at Crooked Media had a great tweet after that, criticizing specifically that whole 20-minute discussion, and said that somebody should have said, oh, I'm actually friends with Greta Thunberg because climate change is a big, important issue and we should care about blah, 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 blah. And I loved it. And also LGBTQ rights, given what's going to happen with the Supreme Court this month, or the fact that we're in Hispanic Heritage Month or Latino Heritage Month. I'm sorry if I'm saying the wrong term. You could talk about immigration and racial issues, racism. Nope. Climate crisis. Nothing. Police brutality. Given what just happened in Fort Worth, Texas. Nothing.
Right. It was. And instead, we're going to argue over Liz Warren's semantics on how she's going to pay for healthcare for a half hour.
Or Kamala Harris going after Warren because Warren is not busy trying to get Trump out of Twitter. And it's like, yeah, I understand that Trump needs to get off of Twitter. He needs to also get out of the White House, just like Elizabeth Warren said.
Amen.
Woo!
The church say amen.
I got very mad because of that last question.
Yeah, that last question definitely had me hot. I tuned out. The only thing that made me tune back in was when they the Bernie announcement about AOC. It was like, oh, okay. He was playing three-dimensional chess. That was impressive. That put the whole thing back into perspective. That increased the rewatchability. Like I wanted to go back and rewatch the debate now, just to kind of look at Bernie's face the whole night and be like, what's going through his mind? Because he knows he's got this in his back pocket. That's the overarching issue right there. Sorry. Everything else to me just kind of flushed over me. It all kind of merged into this gray haze because it was like, all right, you just pulled a G move and you got all the, like, you shored up the young the millennial, the super hyper activist, the Twitter crowd, the, you know what I'm saying, like the active social media animals. You, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a positive way. Like people that are savage about
actively about this.
You just lined them all up in your corner, and like it's just, to me, that's just taking up all the air of the situation. It was. And by the way, you mentioned Amy Klobuchar earlier. I'm over her. Like, she can go. She's not going to win. Like,
she's not going to win.
Go, like this is, it's really time for certain people to start getting out and let's go home. Unless they're sitting there waiting for a massive fumble from Biden that will make him tumble out of the race. Like, it's those are the moderates.
Let's be realistic. Like you said at the beginning, Biden went out on stage first, but his poll numbers keep decreasing. Mm-hmm. Warren's numbers keep increasing. The next couple months are going to be interesting to see what happens. Biden's spending has also, his campaign spending has also been going down, and his donations are not as impressive as Sanders and Warren.
It's not just, not to cut you off, but it's not just about it going down. I was listening to some reporting on this specific issue before we started taping. And it's deeper than that with Biden. He's actually, he spent more this quarter than he earned in donations.
Yeah, his donations.
His burn rate is higher than his donation rate. Which means that his campaign is not, at this moment, is not built for the long haul. I think they said he's got like $9 million left cash on hand. And that sounds like a lot to us mere mortals. But
in a presidential campaign this important, it's nothing. It's peanuts. Let's point out that the RNC and Trump campaign are spending on impeachment or anti-impeachment ads alone $10 million.
Amen.
So
that doesn't require any staff in multiple states.
The next debate will be on November 20th in Georgia. And so far we have 8 candidates. The ones that have not qualified that were in the forced debate are Beto O'Rourke, former congressman from Texas, Amy Klobuchar, Julian Castro, and Tulsi Gabbard. If you ask me who also needs to drop, Tulsi needs to go. Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah. Tulsi, listen, I appreciate her service, number one. Not to get political, but I do. I appreciate her service. But I just don't understand how like the Democrats are not a homogenous party. We are a big tent party, meaning our diversity is our strength. And it requires, frankly, a lot more, cultural sensitivity. And a large part of the electorate, probably larger than we think, is, the LGBTQ community. And this woman was in favor of behavioral therapy where they try to, pray the gay out of you.
Yeah.
I know that she's reversed that position, but I don't know how you can mobilize the electorate to get all this wide coalition of people to show up and vote for you if you've already turned off this whole large group of people.
Well, so, she's also against impeachment. Let's point that out.
Right. Well, I didn't know that. That's news to me, which makes her even more clown-like.
Even more recent comments. So even if she backtracked on her LGBTQ stance, she's against impeachment. What?
Yeah.
Have you been following the news, Congresswoman? Yeah. So we don't want to make this eternal. I know you and I can talk about this for hours. Any final thoughts?
Any big moves that you think that are gonna take place in the polls and in the quote unquote horse race between now and then?
I don't like making predictions because just like the guys at Crooked Media, I lost all my predicting abilities in 2016 when I said there is no way in hell this orange Cheeto is going to make it to the White House. And clearly, I was mistaken.
We were all wrong about that. But
I do agree with you. This weekend, we'll see what happens. The polls in the next couple of weeks will be interesting to watch with AOC and most of the squad's endorsement of Bernie. As we get closer to November, when theoretically the qualification period for the fifth debate will end November 13th. Let's hope a few of these people just come to terms with reality and back off. So we have a smaller debate stage where we can listen to good discussions about important issues and better moderators.
I would definitely like that. Here's my prediction. Ready? And let's, yeah. We need to pull this up next after the debate. So,
oh yeah,
pat me on the back.
I'm ready.
And you can say that I'm right. So, notable omission here: Ayanna Pressley, the fourth member of the squad, is not endorsing. Why not? Because she's a Massachusetts member of the House of Representatives. Uh-huh. She cannot. That would be like, you know, political suicide to not support Elizabeth Warren, right? She'd be playing herself, basically. I think that between now and then, she's going to come out for Elizabeth Warren, number one. And I think that by the time we get to the next debates, Joe Biden will be third in Iowa in the polls. Because of the AOC effect.
You heard it here, people. It's recorded.
Amen.
Okay.
I said it, goddammit.
Let's see. Let me go edit this quickly.
Okay, great.
I gotta go.
All right.